New York City, January the 8th, 1930. The Maxine Elliott Theatre. Imagine you're in the audience for a new dance work. You're expecting, maybe, the kind of performance you've seen at the ballet. Pretty, neat movements, elegance, lace costumes. Or in vaudeville, frills and ribbons and thrilling high kicks. Instead, when the lights come up, there's a young woman on stage wrapped in a weird, stretchy material, making her shape look strange, almost alien. Only her feet, hands and face are uncovered. The performer is also the choreographer. She's Martha Graham, the American dance revolutionary. The piece is called Lamentation, and Martha Graham is uninterested in prettiness, in decoration and ornament. She believes that every movement of the human body reveals what we're thinking. She wants to show the thinking in the body, how every movement tells us who we are. The programme notes describe the dance as not the sorrow of a specific person, time or place, but the personification of grief itself. Graham said, I wear a long tube of material to indicate the tragedy that obsesses the body, the ability to stretch inside your own skin, to witness and test the boundaries of grief. Hunched over on stage, Graham jerks and rocks, one foot moves awkwardly. She's not inviting us to admire the elegance of the foot, but to experience it as a twisted, gnarled extremity. Her fists are balled over her womb. She pulls again and again at the material, hauls it down over her private parts. At times, she seems to be trying to shelter her face from an unseen attacker. One hand examines the other, as if trying to make sense of how it got there. This is dance as thinking within the body, thinking about what bodies go through and what they have to tell us. One dance reviewer said on her death, the art form of dance as we know it today is as inconceivable without Graham's innovations as painting is without Picasso, music without Stravinsky, or literature without James Joyce. Martha Graham was a choreographer, a dancer, and most of all a thinker whose work laid the embodied self bare. This is Human Intelligence, with me, Naomi Alderman. Graham was born in 1894 in Pennsylvania, and she lived until 1991. Her life goes from the era of the American robber barons of the late 19th century all the way to the breakup of the Soviet Union. Her work was to make dance that expressed those huge forces of history and the place of the individual within them. So it feels quite relevant that her father was a psychologist, or what they called at the time, an alienist. Something he said stuck with Martha forever. Paul Jackson has been a reader in choreography and dance at the University of Winchester and was choreography instructor at the Central School of Ballet. He met Martha Graham and shared this story with me.
One of his patients had dinner, and she was a young woman, and she didn't really speak, and she just sat hunched over her food. And then her father explained, oh, she had been ill, and I said, but Martha, movement never lies. And that seems to have been her credo. I don't think movement does lie. You can watch a politician and you can instantly think, I don't believe you. It's not what you're saying. It's the way you're holding your body, the way you're looking at somebody.
That is so good. It has sent a shiver down my spine, actually, which you could probably tell if you were looking at me physically, right? You could go, oh, yes, you can't fake it. If you had to put on the spot, sum up what it was that was so revolutionary about Martha Graham's choreography.
She knew how to connect her mind to her body, to her spirit, to her feelings, and she knew how to then translate that into movement. Richard Buckle, who was the dance critic for The Observer, wrote, she is one of the great creators of our time. She has enlarged the language of our soul.
Tell me what that means.
She developed a way of moving that she was able to pass on to other people, that they could get to the darkest or the most private parts of their being. And I think it had been after a production of Deaths and Entrances, one of her pieces. And there are parts in it where the lead character, played by Graham, it's extraordinary. She falls on the floor and the twitching and the writhing, as though she's having a fit. And this glamorous patron said, why do you do that? And Martha said to her, have you never been to a party and somebody said to you something so awful that you just wanted to disappear?
She saw a dance performance as a teenager and then sought out tuition. Her teachers quickly recognised that she was the best student in the class. And by her early 20s, she was a vaudeville dance star, touring across the US and appearing on Broadway. But alongside that, she had her own ideas about what dance could do. She developed the revolutionary and massively influential Graham technique. This was her dance philosophy, the idea that movement doesn't lie. She developed her ideas in the 1920s, a time when the modernist aesthetic was changing art, architecture, politics, music and literature. There was an emphasis on the rejection of tradition and a move towards purity and honesty. It was Martha Graham who applied that foment of thinking to the human body. So what was the Graham technique?
Now, the sanitised and the sensible version of it, it was based on breathing. We breathe, we can breathe gently, we can take sharp intakes of breath. When we're terrified, it might be short, ragged breaths. And she observed the use of breathing and expanding that into moving the body, moving the back, the torso. So the breath is actually giving life to the movement.
The unsanitised version was, well, there were suggestions that the Graham technique was based on the act of love, with a focus on the contraction and release of the pelvis. But however Graham arrived at it, her technique is the absolute cornerstone of modern American dance. It's also regarded as the first codified modern dance technique, which paved the way for later choreographers. It was a seismic moment in the field. Graham wanted her dance company to pay a huge amount of attention to what each muscle was doing. She didn't care about elegance, she wanted truth. She said that her dance vocabulary was nervous, sharp and zigzag, rather than lyrical, decorative and leisurely. Graham's new spare, unpretty, raw and visceral dance work was an instant sensation. From 1929 to 1938, Martha Graham created 21 works for her all-female company and 36 solos for herself. By 1932, she was on the front cover of Vanity Fair. Her company was recognised as America's flagship for modern dance. And what can we say about the thinking that goes into choreography?
A great deal. If you look at her notebooks, they are covered with the most extraordinary, it might seem a scatterbrain approach, but she will have something from Thomas Traherne to Ben Bellett to St. John Peirce to the Bible, every sort of literature or writing, not just from the West, but from the East as well. And all of that information filters into her mind. It's a scrapbook approach. She will try this. She thinks, I'm going to do something about love, but what does love mean? What did they say about it in the 12th century? What did they say about it in the 20th century? And all of that is filtered through her intelligence.
And what would she then have done with all of that to make that into dance?
She would investigate it herself in the studio. So you have something which is written on paper, which she's read, which she has taken into herself. But as she said in one of her interviews, you don't try to give anger. You don't try to give love. She would let the body actually sort of come up with the material itself.
So she's exploring the way that thoughts and feelings are within the body. They're not separate from the body.
Yes.
What for you is the first piece that you would say, oh yes, that's Martha Graham?
It's only 5 minutes long. It's Heretic. It's a piece from 1928. It's the one against many. She is the one against the chorus of women. And she's battling against them. It looks highly stylized. The women move up and down and they stick. It's very angular. It looks like a New York skyscraper, some of the movement there.
And then, after the Wall Street crash. It's in the aftermath of the First World War.
Yeah, yeah.
The growth of fascism is about to start.
Yes.
It's grappling with that sort of conformity and the individual versus the group, the small person versus the machinery of society.
Yeah.
Which dance had not been doing before.
No, it hadn't.
Graham's work revolutionised movement, but really all parts of dance performances. Costume, lighting, theatrics. She commissioned special musical scores for her own works and employed sculptors to create the stark, spare sets for the performances. Fabrics became part of dance in a way they never had been before. And she kept working, changing and refining. It was that attention to every single part of the art of dance that made me want to group her with perfectionists. She worked intensely hard. She wanted things how she wanted them. She had a vision of a kind of purity of movement that could express the depths of human character and experience. She drove herself and others to achieve it. There are stories about her making many different versions of a dance and throwing out each one because it wasn't right. And something else that perfectionists have in common. Like Da Vinci or Brunel, she could be difficult to work with. There are stories of her taking her frustrations out on her dancers in ways we might call bullying these days. She had strong principles and the will to act on them. She was invited to bring her dance company to Hitler's Germany in 1936. She refused, saying that to do so would be to identify myself with the regime which had persecuted so many artists she respected and admired. After the war, Graham's company toured internationally and was the first modern dance company to perform at the Paris Opera House. Martha Graham went on performing on stage as a dancer until 1968, when she was 74 years old. Not being able to perform anymore after that was devastating for her. When she stopped dancing, she said, "I lost my will to live. I drank too much and brooded." She was eventually hospitalised, stopped drinking, and returned to her dance company. She had a magnificent late flowering. She choreographed continually for the rest of her life, working up to her death in 1991 when she was nearly 97 years old. I asked Paul Jackson where else we might see Martha's legacy today.
That's an easy one. I mean, Madonna, with her amazing shows, the use of costume, lighting, the use of spectacle. Madonna was a protege of Pearl Lang, who was a protege of Martha Graham, and Madonna studied at the Graham School. Madonna was great friends with Martha Graham. She paid her hospital bills.
So everything that we look at Madonna in terms of image making,
yes,
everything that Madonna has done to reinvent the way that women present ourselves, yeah, the way that we think about ourselves, all that is a legacy of Martha Graham.
I think she's a revolutionary. She kept going no matter what. She had her idea, she had her vision, and she let nobody dissuade her from it. It's because when you see the work, it grabs you by the throat, and it's still utterly relevant. She was able to explore what it means to be a human being, what is the human condition. And Robert Cohen, who danced with her, as I say, for nearly 25 years, said he was convinced that there were times where he saw lightning coming off her body when she was on stage.
Thinking, Martha Graham wants to tell us, is happening in the body. Every little movement tells us who we are. Human Intelligence is a BBC Studios production for BBC Radio 4 in collaboration with the Open University. Discover the surprising ways some trailblazers have found their best ideas by visiting the BBC Human Intelligence homepage and following the link to the Open University. Want to be notified as soon as a new episode drops, make sure you're subscribed to Human Intelligence on BBC Sounds and have push notifications turned on.
Hi, it's India here. I'm very excited to bring you the return of Child. So we've been on the journey of an embryo all the way to a baby's first birthday. And now we are going to enter the explosive life of the toddler, because this is the perfect place to unpick the very complicated world of emotions, the emotions that affect us all. So come with us as over 8 episodes we fall through the abundant and dizzying world of happiness, descend into the depths of fear and the gendered and dangerous world of anger, and then crawl, wobble and bounce our way through awe, love, anxiety and surprise. From BBC Radio 4, this is Child with me, India Rackerson. Listen first on BBC Sounds.